Welcome to Asia Pacific Defense Reporter, your go-to source for cutting-edge security insights in the region. Get ready for rapid-fire analysis and commentary from the Asia Pacific with your host, Kim Bergman.
Hello and welcome back. This is sort of an AUKUS special, and in a way I'm sorry that I skipped last week because there have been quite a few developments and I'm going to have difficulty actually covering them all in this episode. I've been wondering if I've been concentrating too much on AUKUS, but it does seem to be the dominant national security topic at the moment, and not necessarily in a good way. Most of the media coverage, I think, has been poor to average, with just about everyone uncritically reporting on the government's line that everything is going wonderfully well. Now, I do realise that nuclear submarines, it's a very specialised domain, and it's not something that people can get up to speed on particularly quickly. Nevertheless, the reporting has been very basic and simplistic. The information that we are giving $4.7 billion to US industry, with the first $3 billion to be transferred later this year, with no strings attached, has never been seriously questioned. And we are now giving an identical $4.7 billion to UK industry that also seems to be another gift, with very few actual deliverables attached to it. Now, am I the only one that wonders how these extraordinary amounts of money were calculated? Who has come up with them? What are they based on? Was just somebody in the Russell offices or someone in a Washington bar deciding that these amounts of money were appropriate? Why not $1 billion? Why not $20 billion? Some visibility of this would be very much in the interests of having an open and honest debate about what's going on. The Australian defence budget is already stretched. The government says that defence funding is being increased, but when you read the fine print, that increase factors in later this decade. Up until 2027, the budget only has very marginal increases, and that's being overtaken by the rate of inflation. But let's start at the beginning, well, by which I mean about a fortnight ago, and I'm going to give you an alternate narrative that is very much at odds with the small amount of actual information given by our government and backed up by supporting nice words from the other two AUKUS partners, both of whom must be absolutely delighted with Australia's without strings financial generosity. I broke the story a fortnight ago that in 2025, the US is only contracting for one Virginia-class submarine, which of course is well short of the 2.33 per year needed to have excess capacity, excess submarines, to sell second-hand ones to Australia. Now, as a journalist, it's always a thrill to be the first to break a story, a bit like revealing the government's secret plans to destroy and bury our entire fleet of Taipan helicopters. But to be fair, this was based on a publicly available document, and I very much doubt that anyone relied on what I was saying. They've got their own sources. Anyway, it caused a bit of a flash of activity. It generated quite a bit of attention, with many media outlets, correctly I believe, reporting on this as a negative development. And the government, of course, in the form of both the Prime Minister and Defence Minister Richard Marles, trotted out the usual platitudes of being very confident that it will all still go ahead as planned. But no one seems to be able to ask the obvious follow-up question of why are they so confident? Is there some sort of secret contract? And of course there isn't. This is yet another case of gullible and malleable Australian politicians being patted on the head by senior US figures going, there, it's all going to be fine. Don't you worry your pretty heads about this. Trust us. Oh, and thanks for the big bundle of cash we are going to receive. The government was actually thrown a lifeline by Congressman Joe Courtney, who I've mentioned previously, who warned that cutting to one Virginia-class submarine, even for a single year, posed a serious risk to achieving the required 2.33 figure, which seems nothing more than a statement of the obvious. Now, rather than using this as a chance to also express some polite concern, the Australian government chose instead to slobber all over American boots supporting their strategy and, incidentally, throwing Representative Courtney under a bus. Now, in addition, the media got the story of the cutback to one submarine, but only part of the tale, namely, why is it being cut back? The immediate answer is funding reasons. The US budget only had a 1% overall increase, but because of inflation, it's actually going backwards in real terms, just like Australia, which the government refuses to accept. However, the even larger problem is the inability of US industry to build submarines fast enough. Now, this was actually explained by the Defense Department comptroller, their equivalent of our chief financial officer, who said that Virginia-class submarines are already 30 months behind schedule. In other words, that's 2.5 years late. And that's because industry just cannot build them fast enough. To that needs to be added the horrendous maintenance backlog, with between 30 to 40% of the entire SSN attack fleet currently tied up somewhere. I'll just mention the celebrated case of the Los Angeles-class USS Boise, which has been awaiting maintenance for almost 9 years. Now, you will learn nothing of this from the Australian government, by the way. So it might be helpful to try and visualise what Virginia submarine production looks like. I think I've described this before, but it might be helpful to go through it again. Each one weighs about as much as 30 747 jumbo jets. Now, let's use that because most people can visualize what a 747 looks like. But submarines are much, much more complicated because they have all sorts of stuff, such as, obviously, a nuclear reactor, weapons, a combat system, and they also have to survive underwater at great depth for extended periods of time. So bear with me. The US industrial base has been able to build about 40 747 equivalents every year, that is 1.2 to 1.3 Virginias. There have been previous attempts over the last decade to boost production rates, but for a variety of reasons, they just haven't worked. Now, just to meet their own needs, the US needs to lift that production in the next 4 years to 60 747 equivalents, or a 50% increase across the entire massive supply chain that has many single points of failure. For example, there is only one company in the US that produces nuclear reactors. There is only one company that builds the massive propeller shafts that these things need. Now, to get to the point of being able to even consider a sale to Australia of second-hand submarines, that means the need for a further increase in production to 70 747s per year, or about double what they're doing now. Each Virginia class has about 10 million discrete components. That's taking it down to the sort of nuts and bolts level. A Columbia class ballistic missile firing submarine has twice as many. And remember, the Columbias are the highest priority for the US Navy. Now, could the US do it? Could they reach the 2.33 by 2028? Well, anything is possible. I can't rule it out, but what I can say is just on the information that we have to date, it seems unlikely that they will be able to do so. Another thing to remember, US companies are indeed hiring people at a rapid rate, and there are boasts from shipbuilders, such as prime contractor Electric Boat, that they've hired this year an extra 5,000 people or whatever. But what they often leave out is how many people have retired or quit and gone to other jobs. So when you factor that in, the actual expansion in the workforce is considerably less. And it's also further complicated by losing people of immense experience to be replaced by new recruits and apprentices. apprentices typically take about 10 years before they can be considered sufficiently skilled to be able to multitask. Now, let's have a look at the British angle and yet another forelock tugging display by Australian politicians and a fair bit of the media, I might say, with the visits of Foreign Secretary Cameron and Defence Secretary Shapp. And last Friday, there was an outpouring of enthusiasm for some supposed new defence agreement signed between Australia and the UK. Well, no, it's not. It's a routine thing called a Status of Forces Agreement that has nothing at all to do with hardware or operations. They exist between many nations. They're all about guaranteeing legal protections for service personnel on a reciprocal basis in other countries. They're very standard. Now, this one with the UK, it might have taken a bit of negotiation because within their armed forces, cannibalism is still widely practiced. The ADF, thankfully, has been able to eliminate most of it. I'm joking, of course, about cannibalism. Even the UK Defence Secretary Shapp, very appropriately with a background in marketing, seemed to understand this, and he commented that he was amazed that this agreement hadn't already been put in place. Well, it hasn't been put in place because basically when the UK stopped the above-ground testing of nuclear weapons on Australian soil in the 1950s, there have been very few of their people out here and very few of our people in the UK that actually require the legal protection of a Status of Forces agreement. Now, okay, the UK itself is running late with the delivery of the Astute-class submarines. Their Astute replacement program, which was known as the SSNX, looked like it was going to be delayed indefinitely until suddenly in 2021, 2022, Australia appeared with a huge bucket of money. Now, the design of the AUKUS submarine has started with zero Australian input. And I can also, something that I'm really going to highlight in future, one large myth that already seems to have exploded or disappeared is the joint US-Australia-UK combat system that was meant to be an integral part of the whole deal. And the combat system is up to 50% of the value of any submarine. That's where all of the fancy electronics and software and processing take place. The Australian Submarine Agency site still says, and I'm reading from the document, quote, "The AUKUS partners will also develop a joint combat system as an expansion of the US-Australia combat system." Well, a couple of things. There is no US-Australia combat system. The one on Collins is a US combat system that has a minute amount of Australian content. And when it comes to this joint three-way combat system, no one in Australian industry has heard a single word about it, and it already looks like a very large broken promise. Now, on their procurements, the UK typically runs late with everything, and it takes about 5 to 7 years to build an Astute. The final two have yet to be delivered. And this notion from the government that Australia will receive the first UK-built submarine in the late 2030s looks completely laughable. So, if we assume that there are no Virginia-class submarines, I give it a, you know, less than a 50% chance, and with Collins retiring or starting to retire in 2038, it's a potentially bleak picture, especially given that by then, several tens of billions of Australian dollars will have been spent. When I was thinking about this recently, I thought the amount of enthusiasm from people like Defence Minister Richard Marles, it's almost like an Australian attempt to put a man on the moon, or rather an Australian person on the moon. Man, I'm reminded of the old feminist joke, if we can put a man on the moon, why can't we put all of them there? Anyway, an endeavour to put an Australian on the moon. Let's say that we are paying billions of dollars and we'll get rockets from the US and a capsule from the UK, and we pay them billions of dollars in advance just so that we can achieve this goal of having a person on the lunar surface by 2040. Now, As exciting as that is, at some point people surely would be asking, why are we actually doing this? How is this huge amount of money actually helping the country? And to date, and I've made this point before and I'll continue to make it, there has been no serious justification for nuclear submarines from this government other than to say they can stay underwater for a long time. But as we've been pointing out for some time, conventional submarines with air-independent propulsion can stay underwater for around 20 days, and they are a lot quieter than nuclear submarines. And this suggestion, which keeps on being repeated by the government, that new technology, some sort of new technology in the 2030s, will make conventional submarines much more easily detectable when they're at the surface running their diesel engines, has never been outlined. What technology is it that's going to make them completely obsolete? And I'll say, whatever this mysterious technology is, that presumably the Chinese are developing, it hasn't deterred other builders of conventional submarines, such as Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, China, Russia, Sweden, Germany, Norway, Italy, the Netherlands, and quite a few others as well. Anyway, I'm unfortunately starting to run out of time, but I'm going to start a little news segment called Hotel Kingston Friday Lunch Rumours. And the most recent one is it sounds like the appalling decision to spend $300 million purchasing a US towed array sonar called CERTAS. And I mentioned this in an early, possibly the first or second podcast. This was as a consequence of AUKUS. It looks like it has been scrapped for reasons of cost. But before starting the party, that's the good news, that the money will no longer be going to US companies. But the project is going to be scrapped entirely. My hope was that the money, even just a small fraction of it, would be invested with Australian companies building a sonar system here, something that we have the capability to do, no doubt about that. The entire thing has been cancelled, and I predict that there are going to be a whole lot more activities that will be cancelled or curtailed to pay for AUKUS, because we are committing these huge amounts of money and at the moment for very little direct benefit. As always, thank you for listening and see you next time.
That's today's Asia Pacific Defence Reporter. For more in-depth articles, expert opinions and exclusive interviews, visit asiapacificdefencereporter.com. Stay informed, stay ahead. This is your source for all things defence. Until next time.